Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. Welcome to A Response of a Day for the 28th of Tishrei. And for today, we're going to discuss an article or a discussion Chaim David HaLevi has in Shut Aseh Lecha Rav in Volume 8, Chapter 64, Siman Samach Dalet, about brain death. He entitles it, wrote Hilchatiyot Lahashtalat Kaved, halachic comments on the question of liver transplants, but it's really going to be about brain death. It happens to be that just last week, somebody contacted me because in the past, I have supported an organization called HODES, the Halachic Organ Donor Society, which follows the view that what is considered brain death in medical circles is valid halakhically as well for transplanting things. And this person wrote to me saying to me he thinks that I'm wrong for it, and I had to say that since I had come across this response and this idea of Chaim David HaLevi, I had actually been questioning myself on that, and I think it raises important issues, and it's a continuing controversy. The RCA recently had a long analysis process, a research process, and they came out also fundamentally thinking that brain death is not something that should be relied upon as a halakhic category in terms of deciding when one can transplant things. And we'll get to see some of the issues in this response. So, as always, I am not here to rule on halakhic issues. I'm only presenting the thoughts of Rav Chaim David HaLevi, and we have every reason to think that those who disagree with him, who today believe that brain death is a valid criteria, would have answers to these questions. So I don't want anybody to think that I am ruling here or that I have the expertise to rule on these issues. I'm only presenting some very interesting thoughts of Rav Chaim David HaLevi. He is reacting to an article. First of all, he starts off by saying that since he's titled it He'arot Hilchatiyot, halakhic comments, he doesn't mean in any way that he is paskin, that he is ruling, and that he's expressing his halachic ruling on this issue. And he writes, "Mita'amim hashimurim imanu," for reasons that I will keep to myself, basically, that are guarded for within us. And that's, to me, a valuable reminder that we don't always know Torah scholars, even public Torah scholars, in their fullness. That very often they have reasons to say what they say, and they pick and choose, as they're supposed to, pick and choose what they say carefully. And if that's true, then it means that there might be much that they say that we will never know. So this is from the 28th of Tishrei of Tuf Shin Mem Zion, which was 1986. So then, and that's the reason why we have for today, 28th of Tishrei, there was an article in Hatzofeh. Hatzofeh was a newspaper, I think, of the Mizrahi movement. It's a reminder of a time when media were aligned with certain political parties, and Hatzofeh was of the national religious movement. And Rav Goren, Alav Hashalom, who had been the Ashkenazic chief rabbi of Israel, had written an article about liver transplantation according to halacha. So the key question, one of the key questions, liver transplantation is that it's attached to the person who's using it. There was, if anybody cares, there was a long time ago a MASH episode, which was less funny than most of the MASH episodes, in which you've got two people, one of whom needs, I think it was like aortic material. He needed like artery material for his heart. And one of the characters, BJ, was waiting with that person, just waiting for the transplant. And the other main character, played by Alan Alda, Hawkeye, was waiting with the guy who was dying and who they were going to take the aortic material from to give it to the new person. So they were not waiting for brain death. They were waiting for actual death, whatever their criteria were. That's not important to the show. But when he finally brings it in, so BJ says, "What took you so long?" And Hawkeye says, the guy who it was attached to was still using it. And that's a reminder that in many, many cases of transplantation, you can only transplant things once the donor has passed away. So with liver transplantation, that's true because the person needs a liver until they're done with it. So Rav Goren in this article had apparently said that medically, there are three stages to death. It doesn't always happen in stages. It can happen all at once, but it can happen in stages. You have brain death, where the brain dies in all of its parts, including the stem, and in a way that is irreversible. So if it's irreversible, then there will be those who will argue that that already constitutes death, especially since Rav Goren is going to say the brain stem is what really controls respiration. So one option is brain death. Then there's a second stage where the heart stops beating. And then the third stage is where all the parts of the body stop working. So they often come very close together, and there's no discussion. But sometimes they can be separated, especially nowadays when there can be medical tools that can help keep the heart pumping artificially and therefore keeping many of the organs working, but the brain death has already occurred. And that's where you can get a situation where you have brain death, and yet, and it's much, much better medically, apparently, to transplant organs before there's been any of the things that happen immediately upon the cessation of heartbeat and stuff like that. So the deterioration in organs happens almost immediately. And that's why in the medical sense, from positive motives, they want to find ways to define something as death accurately and well. I don't mean that they're trying to push up death, but when they know that somebody's going to die, there's nothing they can do about it, and they believe that there's no life left in the person because the brain is dead and therefore there's nothing going on, this is an opportunity to transplant things like livers and save people's lives. So that's where it starts. Rav Goren says that he believes, and he wasn't the only one by far, discussion of exactly who held what is an important question, but I think Rabbi Tendler, who still should live for a long and healthy life, I believe Rabbi Moshe David Tendler is also a very strong proponent of brain death as a valid halachic criterion, and he claims that his father-in-law, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, also held that way. That's a topic of dispute as to what Rav Moshe Feinstein himself held. But in any case, Rav Goren in this article says that brain death is a valid criterion of death because once the brain stem is no longer working, that should be considered death because the halacha paskins that the cessation of breathing from the mouth, from the nose, is in fact death. So Rav Goren says, but we now know that the center that controls breathing is in that brainstem. So if the brainstem isn't working anymore, then that means there is no natural breathing anymore, even if it's true that the heart is still beating, and even if it's true that we can artificially cause respiration, but the breathing has stopped, and therefore, as far as halacha was concerned, the person has already passed away, and whatever else we see, the beating of the heart, and sometimes the movement of other parts of the body, that's not evidence of life. That is, we have, you know, you certainly have in other animals that after death, there is some movement goes on. So, for example, and I'm not recommending this, but let's suppose there are animals whose heads get cut off and then they move around for a while afterwards. So halakhically, once the head is cut off, the animal is certainly dead. So that movement is just leftover motion of the nervous system that has nothing to do with life. So Rav Goren is saying, if we can qualify, if we can be sure, since we can be sure, in his opinion, that breathing is the standard of life in halacha, and that, by the way, is true. Rav Chaim David Halevi, I think everyone will accept that, that breathing is the standard of life. The only question is, when there's brain death and we're helping the person respirate, do we know the breathing has stopped? Rav Goren's argument was that even if the heart is beating and therefore it seems like there's respiration going on, that doesn't count as real breathing because once the brain stem isn't really functioning, there's no breathing going on. So therefore, he gave permission to transplant a liver once there's been brain death, even though the heart is still beating. Now, clearly, Rav Chaim David Halevi says, nobody mentioned this in halacha beforehand, right? Because it was always true until very recently that once the breathing stopped, even if it was true that the brain had died beforehand, you couldn't tell and you wouldn't know until the breathing stopped, and therefore there was no discussion of this. That doesn't mean that Rav Goren is wrong. Rav Chaim David Halevi is not saying that's the reason he's wrong. He's saying it's obvious he never mentioned that way, but he also thinks that he's not correct. So he says, it is true that the cessation of breathing is the standard, as it says in the Gemara Yoman Peheim and Aleph, and he's had a previous article and discussion of that, where he's explained that at length, he says. And it's based on the verse, Kol Asher Nishmat Ruach Chayim Be'apav, any creature, any being that has the soul of the breath of life in its nose. So that shows you the breathing. So Rav Goren is saying, Rav Chaim David Halevi is pointing out that once the center of breathing, the control center of breathing in the brain stops functioning, then it's got to be that breathing has stopped as well as for halachic purposes, and therefore it's got to be okay. Now, Rav Chaim David Halevi says, well, it's never been mentioned halacha, and that's a bit of a problem, especially since it's just based on what the doctors assume about the way things work. And we're going to come back to that several times in the course of this discussion of Rav Chaim David Halevi's, that one of his central questions is, when and how far do we trust medical theories about what's going on and what's not going on? And so he points out an article by Dr. Avraham Steinberg, who I think we've seen together. I know I've seen it in the written versions of A Response of a Day that appear on TorahMusings.com, but I think we've seen some together of Dr. Avraham Steinberg, who was one of the doctors in Yerushalayim who had close relationships with various Gedolim of the time, with Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Shtichas Levracha, with the Tzitz Eliezer, Shtichas Levracha. And so he was well known as a doctor, and that's what he fundamentally did, but also a lamed and a real Torah scholar, somebody who cared about Torah and learned Torah. And he brought this view, right? And he attacks it, or he glosses it, or he disagrees with it. So Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi says, look there, it's a doctor. He gives you some great ha'arot, some great discussions and points that you might not have realized on your own. So he says, I'm going to just quote a very little bit. He wants people to read the article, but I'm going to quote a very little bit from there. He says, first, we'd have to know specifically and certainly and with complete certainty that, in fact, this person's brainstem has ceased working and cannot be reversed. And because of that, there would very soon after that be a heart attack. Meaning, the challenge becomes that we today can artificially keep a lot of diseases going, and you don't want to stop them going, because if the person then has actually a heart attack and then dies, then you have all the problems with transplantation you have to begin with. So the claim is that the brainstem has stopped working. That means breathing has stopped. That means the person is going to die, and therefore we can treat them as dead. But you don't necessarily know that, right? It could be that we see evidence the brainstem has died. That's what our evidence. And yet if we took them off all the machines, they would still go on breathing on their own for whatever period of time. So that's not always so clear. And unless you know it for sure, you can't do anything about it. Because that piece of knowledge is not so clear, not so well known. And halachically, if the person would breathe for, you know, another 20 minutes on their own, then they're not dead, right? Because we're all agreed that breathing is the standard. So that's one point that Dr. Avram Steinberg says. You don't really have to know it, not just in the general case, that generally when we see these events happening to the brainstem, it means that. But you need to know in this specific case that we can be completely confident that this person's breathing has stopped, and therefore that means, if the breathing has stopped on its own, that means very soon afterwards there'll be a heart attack, because the heart can't continue pumping without breath, and then the whole body will die. And we don't have that, and this is in 1986, or in 1986, he was saying that we don't yet have that medical knowledge. So today, you'll have questions about that. That will always be a question to continue raising, is where is our medical knowledge? But that's the kind of medical knowledge we would need before we could even entertain the possibility. Then Dr. Avram Steinberg points out that until today, until his point in 1986, you've had more than 30 different perspectives on what the criteria are for brain death. So some of those criteria are agreed upon by everybody, but there are differences of approach, fundamental different approaches in some areas among the various shitot, among the various opinions, meaning that he's saying that in the medical community, and this I find in other things, the medical community, some doctors will speak with a certainty about the consensus of the medical community, and then you do a little research and you find out that that's not nearly as much of a consensus as you think there is. So it would be one thing if all doctors agreed that when you see this thing, this is what happens. They may still be wrong, but at least you'd have the complete consensus of the medical community. But Dr. Avram Steinberg is pointing out, you have 30 different perspectives. They agree on some things, but there are a lot of things they don't agree on. Even among within the things they all agree on, or most of them agree on, there's a requirement that there's a cessation of independent breathing. Right? It's not full brain death if the patient were off all the machines and was still breathing. Nobody would think that you're allowed to take out their liver transplant, their liver at that point, because whatever's going on in the brain stem, you see the breathing. And then he writes, there's a practical problem in the medical definition of brain death, because it requires proof that it's irreversible. So proof of irreversibility, Dr. Avram Steinberg wrote in 1986, proof of irreversibility is you need to do various checks, whatever they are, and then after a while, check it again. And then after a while, check it again, that there's been no improvement, right? Even according to the various perspectives, it's between 1 and 72 hours. So that's a big that's a big span in which you're going to do these checkings, right? So and then he quotes a little bit more from the article. He says, so certain researchers have raised the possibility when they want to find newer criteria or more exact criteria, and part of the motivation in their criteria is not having to do with this particular deceased, right? There's a problem of motivation here, because the people who are trying to establish criteria for brain death aren't doing it for the sake of the person of the patient. They're doing it because they want to find it an earlier opportunity to transplant organs. Now, there's a it's out of positive motives for other people who could benefit from the plan transplant. But there's some kind of a conflict of interest here, as I mentioned in the MASH episode that I brought up before, right? It's still attached to somebody who's still using it, and they've got this urge to push up the time of death because there are other people who need it. So therefore, Dr. Steinberg says, you have to be very careful what criteria you use, that you have to make sure that they are of matter in terms of this particular chole, and that we don't, God forbid, make ourselves believe that breathing has stopped and let these other things come into play, even though those other things are very important. So he goes on to say that the middle view, in terms of establishing the time of death, is you have a whole standard, right? It's the cessation of breathing, the stopping of the heart, and the brain stopping to work. And then in Hatzofeh, on the 29th of Tevet of 1968, it says that 4 days after clinical death, sometimes you can still find electric activity in the brain. This happens today too, and I think it drives some doctors crazy because they say that electrical activity is no different than what we said before about an animal that had its head cut off and it's just shaking around. So the people who believe in brain death don't like comments like that because they say it's a distraction and it's not relevant, and so it gets into all problematic kinds of things. But along the way there, he mentioned there were doctors who said, well, that's a problem. If you can find electric activity in the brain, then you can't be as sure that there was brain death as you thought there were. So that becomes a problem. So now Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi steps back and he says, I quoted all this to you to point out that even according to the opinion that says that brain death is death, meaning there's two questions. One question is, do we accept this as a category, that if we could ascertain brain death, then we could be sure that that counts as death halakhically, and therefore we can transplant things even though we've got the heart still going and we've got some kind of respiration still going through artificial means, but we can be sure the person counts halakhically as dead. That's question one. Then question two, which Chaim Dov HaLevi is pointing out right now, is then we'd have to agree on what counts as brain death to be sure that, in fact, the person has passed away. And part of why he's quoted is to show that it's not clear at all what counts as brain death. I think some of that, and I'm not a medical doctor and I don't keep up with the literature on this, but I believe that much of this is still problematic today, that there's all these different categories, and that doctors will tell you this category we're certain is brain death, and then there's all these other things that get confused with it. And so that's a problem. Like an irreversible coma is not brain death. And so it gets to be very complicated. Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi is saying that it's not only complicated, there are researchers, so people in the field, who think that just the lack of independent breathing, lack of ability to breathe on your own, is already establishes brain death. And since that's not the general opinion, general opinion requires that we believe that without that breathing, that will immediately lead to the other things happening, it's a problem, especially if you have a medical crew, who've got a transplant candidate waiting, the urge and the mode and then the push to push up the time of death could be very problematic. And then he says, this is a general question with science, and it's a problem, although scientists get bristle at this, he says, and you can't know because in the future, science might learn other things, and that happens. And the question is, how much confidence are we allowed to have, and how much, and what kinds of things that allow us to do what? And here, the conflict is clear because some of us have this strong urge to say, well, transplantation is so important, and you're saving lives, and you're helping people. How can you be such a stickler about what might seem to them technical halachic details? And the other side will say, you're creating a standard of death that's not clear, not well agreed upon, and is not certain to be a standard of death, especially halakhically, that we're going to get to in a second. So these are the two sides. Are we more careful about what constitutes death, and therefore what constitutes murder, really? Or are we more careful about trying to make sure that we can transplant things? I think that's an important set of questions, and to me, an underlying part of that set of questions, I think some of the people, not all for sure, but some of the people who are very positively disposed towards transplantation, therefore think that, yes, we can accept the versions of brain death that are fairly well agreed upon in the scientific community, have this sense that we have this desire to express our human expertise as much as we can. And so whenever we see an opportunity to do something that's remarkable, that will save lives, that will help people, and it's us doing it, there are some people who are more prone or more positively disposed towards doing that, and they feel that it's very important to make sure to do that. That being true, we get to where we get to. Now, Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi turns to also his more halachic debate. All of that so far was a problem with the scientific standard of brain death, even if we're going to accept the plausibility of brain death as a scientific standard. He doesn't think it's been well enough established to give us the confidence to know what we're doing. But in addition, he says, if you look at the Gemara in Yoma, he thinks it's very clear that it's cessation of actual breathing. And there is no room to say that because I know that the brainstem isn't working anymore, and that's what controls breathing, then it must be that breathing will stop, even though I've got the person on a respirator, but I can know that... He says he doesn't think that you're allowed to rely on that because the Gemara's sources are, if you think about it, this is pikuach nefesh. The source of the phrase pikuach nefesh is that if somebody was buried under a mound of rubble, we today see this, you have an earthquake, you have this, a building collapse, whatever it is, you have people buried in the rubble, and it's Shabbos. So anybody whose lives we can save, we can remove the, you can pull off the stones, you can remove the rubble, even though it's a violation of Shabbos of some sort, you can remove it, but how much can you remove? We can't remove it to bury the person, right? Because once the person has sadly passed away, then we're not allowed to violate Shabbos to bury them. We can get them after Shabbos and bury them. So where do you go to? Until when are you allowed to hope and pray and think that the person might still be living? So the halacha is you go until their nose. What's happening in their nose? There's breathing in their nose. And the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, Pasuk in that way, that if they checked and they don't find breathing, then they have to leave the person because he's already passed away. So he adds in parentheses that today, that might not be so clear, because today very often we have the ability to resuscitate people. So we'd have to be, you know, once we got to the nose, there was no breathing, we'd have to also be sure that we couldn't resuscitate the person. In many situations, fortunately, we have the ability to resuscitate them. So he says, in terms of the question of taking rubble off of victims on Shabbat, it's more complicated today because we don't always know that they're irreversibly dead just because we see no breathing. Happens to be, by the way, there are also all these horror stories about people being buried alive because they pause in their breathing long enough, people try to find out if they're breathing and they're not. That would be a complication that Chaim David Lieber doesn't raise, but it's an interesting one to think about in terms of the brain death thing as well. So the Chasam Sofer, which is a while ago, the Chasam Sofer gave three conditions for being sure that somebody was dead. And like I just said a second ago, you want to be sure, forget transplantation, he says you want to be sure because you don't want to bury people alive. And that, sadly, seems to have happened in the past. So his three criteria are, the person is lying there dead, as it were, meaning they're not moving, utalka evin domain, lying there like an unmovable stone, there is no pulse, and there's a cessation of breathing. When you have all three of those together, the person is considered dead. So it's fairly clear that Chasam Sofer is trying to say, how do we know that when we see a cessation of breathing, it's full cessation? And he's saying that unless you have the other two criteria, you can't be sure that this wasn't a pause in the breathing, however long it might be, but that it's not the person is breathing in some way that we can't detect, or there's a pause, or whatever it is. So Rav Goren didn't want to disagree with Chasam Sofer. Right? Theoretically, Rav Goren is a rabbi of rank. He knew a tremendous amount. He could say, Chasam Sofer holds this way. He lived in the 1800s. I live in the 1900s. I disagree with him. Right? You can say such a thing. People resist that because there's a certain lack of, it seems like there's a certain lack of humility in that. So Rav Goren didn't want to. So Rav Goren said that it might be that when Rav Chasam Sofer gave the first two conditions, they weren't absolutely required because, after all, the sugya in Yoma that we just mentioned only speaks about breathing. So if Rav Goren is right, then the Chasam Sofer really meant it's all about cessation of breathing, and the other two criteria aren't vitally necessary. If we had some other way to be sure that breathing has stopped completely, then we could rely on that. Rav Chaim David Lieber says that's very strange to say that, because why would the Chasam Sofer write these two conditions twice? He says, after the person is already not moving, and the pulse has stopped, if after that breathing stops, then the person is considered passed away. And he doesn't really mean it, right? It's not necessary that it be that way. He writes it as if that's the process that has to be undergone, and doesn't really mean it. So Rav Chaim David says, no, he thinks the Chasam Sofer means that, and the question would be whether we still have this today, but there are times when breathing stops, and it's not death that's happening, and it comes back. And we might miss that it comes back. Right, so the mirror test, right? You put a mirror up in the thing, you try to catch breathing, you don't. You do it 5 minutes later, you don't. It doesn't matter because you might have missed it. There might have been these, you know, breaths coming in long, infrequently enough for us to miss it, but frequently enough to keep the person alive, and then you have a problem. And that's why Chaim David Lieber says we don't rely on cessation of breathing as the sign of death because we're not confident of our ability to be sure that we catch all the independent breathing that goes on. Because we see times when a person stops breathing, and for today, you know, if you do CPR or you help them breathe artificially for a while, they come back. So if that's true, then it's not true that they're necessarily dead, just because we see a cessation of breathing. So that's why he thinks the Qasim Sofer had these other conditions as well, to be sure that the person is not moving and they don't have a pulse. And then after that, if the breathing stops, that will be finally a sign of death. So he says that also answers a question that Goran had raised about the Qasim Sofer's criteria. He says if the Qasim Sofer was right, why did that Gemara in Yoma say you can check the person up until the nose? Because however you get to the nose, you'll have passed a pulse along the way. So Goran says, I don't understand. If the pulse isn't there, then you should know already, right? If the Qasim Sofer is right that the pulse is necessary to life, and the one person has stopped the pulse, they're not alive anymore. So Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi says, no, that's the answer. The answer is the Qasim Sofer didn't mean that the lack of a pulse means they're dead. It meant that the lack of a pulse will verify that the cessation of breathing is cessation of breathing. So you get along the way, you'll find no pulse. If you found a pulse, you would certainly continue, you know, trying to get this person out from under the rubble because they're obviously still breathing. There's still a pulse going on. If there's no pulse, that's the point at which you'll continue until the nose to be sure there's also no breathing. He gives another example from Erech, and the Gemara talks about a woman who was giving birth, and she sadly passes away, and it's Shabbos. So we're allowed to be Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, you're allowed to, what we would call a cesarean today, and take out the baby, because maybe the baby will be able to survive. And so Pikuach Nefesh, right, even the doubtful possibility, the possibility that the baby's alive, allows us to violate Shabbos. And that's true even though the baby doesn't yet have a standard of living. Meaning usually you might have thought we only save those people who are already living when they have what's called a chezkat chai. They have a status of being alive, but the fetus doesn't have that. Nonetheless, we'll violate Shabbos even to try to bring forth that life that isn't yet there if there's a chance that it could be, that the baby could live. So when we do that, he says it's clear that we wouldn't do it while her heart is still beating. Right, just because we say there's brain death, we're not going to destroy her life. And so today, it would be complicated because what he means is there are times when a cesarean can be a problem for her, and it's unclear that we would do something that's dangerous to her and might kill her to save the baby. So that's a complicated question. But he's saying the point is, in the Gemara there, it's clear the Gemara means that there's no pulse, and yet the Gemara still talks about that we have to be sure that she's not alive anymore, and therefore nobody relied on this idea of brain death. Last piece of this is, now he comes back to the science of it. He says, after he wrote all of this, in the media, there's news of a guy who came up with what he said was a better machine that will be more exactly able to demonstrate or to show or to be sure that there was brain death. And a guy named Professor Chaim Sommer, he gave an interview in the news media in Cheshvan HaTavshin Mem Zayin, and he said, after a lot of experimentation, over 20 years of experimentation, I've got a much more exact way to do it. So that would seem to mean that we can be very sure that there's been complete cessation of activity in the brainstem, and therefore they're really not going to be able to breathe. But he says, I'm going to quote Dr. Steinberg in the same article about this invention, who said, you know, for a few years, we were relying on EEGs to establish activity in the brain. And then it turned out that, and we used to use that to establish brain death. And now it turns out that you think we have a better way to do it. He says maybe there'll be even a better way to do it. Right, so how are you going to know, Rav Chaim Dov HaLevi says, how are you going to be sure that what we have now quantifies or establishes brain death with enough certainty when until now we thought we had the certainty of the EEG? Now on the new machine, it turns out the EEG gets it wrong sometimes. Right? If it just proved the EEGs get it right, then the new machine wouldn't have been this big advance. It would be interesting news, but nothing special because all it did was confirm that the EEGs always got it right. But it turns out that's not what happened. It showed that the EEGs were detecting activity only in one part of the brain, or lack of activity in one area, the brain. It seems like he means he talks about the klipat hamoach, which is the klipat, like the peel or the rind, but he means like the outer part of the brain. But there might have been continued activity deeper in the brain. So now this guy comes along and says, I've got a better machine. It finds the activity deeper in the brain. So what happens if in the future it turns out that he went X deep and then somebody finds out I can go deeper than that? So that's a problem with these kinds of machines or kinds of he has. Then he points out that this Professor Summer, who says the machine does it well, he says there are three rules, there are three conditions for doing this. We have to know what happened to the person to be have any even to begin the discussion, meaning it's not the machine itself can independently verify brain death or not. First, you have to know what happened to the person to know that there's a possibility there was brain death, which is an interesting criterion to hold by because it already makes it clear that the machine itself doesn't do it. Then you need to have a clinical examination to see that there's evidence of brain death. And then you do use the machine, and you use the machine giving at intervals of 12 hours between each inspection. So Chaim Dolevi says, so that's already a problem. Maybe future medical investigations will show that there's a need for another kind of checking. Maybe after you check for 12 hours, you really need to check 12 hours later because it turns out we find times when it goes this way. So that's always a problematic question in science, right? How do you know? When are you how sure of what it is? It comes up, let's say, in other areas with, let's say, side effects of medications. So you do a check, and they do, before they put the medication on the market, they check for 5 years. And that's what all that's required by law. They've done their job, and they think there are no major side effects. And it turns out, 12 years into treatment, many people are showing up, or a significant minority of people are showing up with side effects. It turns out you didn't know. So if it's side effects in a medication, maybe you want to take the risk, maybe you don't. But we're kind of ladies pointing out here, we're talking about killing people. Right? And if we're killing people, that's especially problematic. How can we, this is how we close this, how can we people, humanity, be so sure that we've gotten to such a level of knowledge to be absolutely sure that we can say these people have passed away, people have died, such that we can take out parts of their body? And so Dr. Steinberg as well had said that a third opinion when it comes to death is that you need to have a complete cessation of the pulse along with the lack of breathing. And of course, if you follow that opinion, then it's much harder to transplant certain organs because they start dying as soon as the pulse is no longer there, and therefore a problem. So I think these are really very important issues. They continue to be important issues. I think that the weight of halachic opinion is coming around more towards the idea that we can't be sure. We aren't yet sure enough that this mode of death qualifies halachically as death to make many of these transplants problematic. There's obviously hold very much the other way. We're very convinced that we are losing out on the opportunity to save people's lives by virtue of being what they see as overly conservative with halacha. But this is the view of Chaim David Halevi that we are reading as our responsive day for the 28th of Tishrei, a discussion of brain death and what we can or cannot know about brain death and what we can or cannot use in halachic purposes. Have a great day.